It's Wednesday and time for a weekly discussion of state politics of the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today is Rapid City reporter Seth Tupper. And Seth, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Kevin Wooster's also scheduled to join us. We're still trying to get a hold of him. So, Seth, right now anyway, it's just you and me, if that's okay.
All right.
All right.
Kevin's probably out shooting a turkey for Thanksgiving.
Okay, there we go. Well, first of all, a couple of weeks after the election, former U.S. Senate candidate Rick Wyland is in the news as a possible candidate for chairman of the state Democratic Party. How likely is it that he would run for that job?
Well, when I saw some rumors floated about that on the Madville Times blog and on Facebook, I contacted him. It didn't look like anybody had asked him, so I asked him, and he said he's been asked by some of the rank and file members to consider the position, and he said he's not ruling it out. Now, the Democrats meet next month in Chamberlain, their state central committee, and that position will be up for election. And the current chairwoman of the state party, Deb Kinect, said she's not going to seek another term as chairman. And there's at least a couple other candidates that are known. Jeff Barth, the Minnehaha County Commissioner, and also Ann Tornberg, who I believe is from Beersford, who was an unsuccessful candidate for the legislature this time around. So I don't know how likely it is. He seemed to be just mulling it, and I suppose this soon after a loss in a major election like Wyland suffered, it's probably hard to determine what exactly you want to do. But I guess it's a possibility, and I suppose a lot of it depends not only on what he wants to do, but also where, you know, people in the party and the party's leaders want to go, what kind of future direction they want to take.
What does the party chairman do? Is the party chairman that the person responsible for the direction of the party, or what does it involve?
I would say so. Yeah, I guess you'd have to ask the Democrats for a better answer on that, since I don't get to sit in on a lot of their internal strategizing. But my take on it would be that the chairman is kind of the chairman of the board, so to speak, and sets the overall direction. Probably the budget, the hiring, that kind of thing. They have an executive director, of course, Zach Crago, who is kind of more of the day-to-day manager of operations and that kind of thing. But he reports to higher-ups, including the chairman, who, like I said, I assume would be more in charge of just overall direction and philosophy.
Do you think that if Rick Wyland decides to run for the chairman and becomes the chairman, if he's elected by the Democrats, you think he could make a difference for the future of the Democrats in South Dakota?
Well, he certainly would make a difference. I think he'd take the party in a new direction. Whether that would be successful or not, would be anybody's guess. But it's clear that Wyland was more of a progressive, more of a liberal candidate than Democrats have traditionally been in big Senate races in South Dakota. When you think about, or in House races, when you think about Stephanie Herseth-Sandlin and Tim Johnson, they've been a lot more moderate in their approach and have tried to maybe straddle the fence a little more between Republican voters and Democrat voters. Whereas Wyland was just unabashedly, progressive and liberal, and that would be a new direction. And I suppose if he is seriously considered, which, whether he will or won't be, I don't know yet, but Democrats would have to weigh that. I mean, I think if he did become the chair of the party, they'd be signaling that they're going in that different direction for sure.
Well, that leads us to a piece that was written by a former McGovern Athabascan-Daschle strategist and staffer, Peter Stavrianos, essentially saying that the Wyland campaign was much more successful than the election day results showed. He argues that Wyland's progressive anti-big money politics message was much closer to victory. I'm wondering if, from your perspective, that argument holds weight, or is it more like a losing football coach saying that, except for the final score, is his team actually won?
Well, it's probably a little of both. I read the piece, and it you have to say up front, obviously, when you lose by 20 points, it's difficult. You're going to have a difficult time convincing anybody that you were successful. On the other hand, anybody who watched the campaign as it progressed, has to admit that, there was something there. We had national media in South Dakota. You know, the race was all the rage for a couple of weeks there in early to mid-October when it looked like, you know, Mike Rounds might be in trouble. And so there was something there, and Rick Weiland was getting attention, and he was reaching people. And but then, of course, you know, he ends up losing by 20 points. Now, in that article, there was a reference to a public policy polling poll that said that if Pressler would have dropped out and it was a Rounds versus Weiland race, you know, of course there was a fourth candidate, Gordon Howie, as well, but he only pulled 3-4%, something like that. But if it was a Weiland versus Rounds race, essentially, that Weiland would have lost by only 2 points. That was the claim. I went looking for that poll, and if it was conducted, it wasn't released publicly that I could see on the public policy polling's website. And maybe it was an internal poll. I don't know. But it's obvious that, you know, if Pressler wouldn't have been in the race, you know, some of those votes would have went to Weiland, and the author of this article says a lot of them would, because he argues that Pressler ran as a lot more liberal than he was during his tenure as a Republican congressman, and that he's was aligned with Obama on a lot of issues, that kind of thing. So we'll never know, but yeah, certainly it was a different kind of campaign. I think it got noticed because of that. It was bold in that as I said, Weiland was kind of unabashedly progressive, where a lot of South Dakota Democrats either haven't been that way or have been afraid to show their true colors. And so we'll see whether it influences anybody going forward. You know, maybe it was the template for Democrats to stay away from, and maybe it was a template for future success. We'll have to see.
Well, looking at another one of the Democratic candidates from the fall election, Corina Robinson, who lost her bid to unseat Republican Congresswoman Kristi Noem. Have we heard anything from her? Wondering if she'll remain a figure in South Dakota Democratic politics.
I don't think so. She was unknown before the election. After the election, I think it'll stay the same way. You know, when you look through the history of modern elections in South Dakota, there's a lot of names people don't remember anymore. I believe it was Chris Lean from out here ran against Stephanie Ursa-Sandlin, and political wise was never heard from again. I was at a conference recently where the name Charlene Haar came up. She ran against Tom Daschle once. She was a Republican, but basically never heard from again as far as a campaign. Bruce Whalen is another one that comes to mind. He was a Republican who ran from the Pine Ridge area for Congress, you know, in the last 10 years or so. Never popped up again in any statewide race. So, you know, you always hear after somebody runs a losing campaign that sometimes you hear that, well, maybe they establish name recognition and momentum for a future race. You don't see that a whole lot in South Dakota. Stephanie Ursa-Sandlin did that and was unsuccessful, I think, in her first run, and then was able to parlay that into future success. But more often than not, you find these sort of people that are political unknowns who arise for a single race and lose, that they just kind of fade from the scene.
Well, Seth, you mentioned Stephanie Ursa-Sandlin. Her name was tossed around last year as we're ramping up into the 2014 election, the one that's just concluded. Is her name still going to be brought up as we look ahead to 2016 for Congress or maybe another office?
Absolutely. I think, as long as she's living in South Dakota and is eligible to run for an office from South Dakota, I think, you know, she'll always be in the mix. Obviously had, you know, electoral success previously, and, you could argue that the longer she stays out of the game, the harder it'll be to get back into it. But somebody with as much name, of course, her name recognition fades the longer she's out of office, so there would be challenges there. But I think, you know, she was successful enough before and has enough success within the party that obviously she'd be formidable if ever she would get back into a race. And you could also argue that having now worked in the private sector, having had a child, She has more experiences to bring to a potential race that will make her more, could make her more relatable to voters. And so obviously, yeah, I think, she'll, speculation around her will continue forever as long as she's around and eligible to run for an office from here.
Well, what about speculation for U.S. Attorney Brendan Johnson? His name was also bandied about as a possible Senate candidate or congressional candidate for the Democrats in the 2014 election cycle.
I think it's a similar story with him. He's not as well known to the general public as Stephanie Herseth Sandlin, because as a U.S. attorney for South Dakota, his job isn't quite as high profile, but it does have a profile, and he is known to some people, and of course he's got the Johnson name and that kind of name recognition. And with his father retiring and leaving office in January, in a way that solves maybe a minor problem for him, in that anybody who runs who has a father in office will always run up against some people who don't want that person elected because maybe they think they got some unfair advantages, things like that. If he runs now in the future, he'll have the Johnson name to run on, but he'll essentially be running on his own with his father out of office. And I've interviewed him and met him on numerous occasions, and he's charismatic, he's well-spoken, ambitious, and has all those kinds of qualities. When you throw in the name recognition with his last name, he certainly has all the qualities that you'd think Democrats would want in a candidate. What's unknown is what is his ambition? Does he want to go in a political office or not? And is there a race out there that he views as winnable that he could get into?
Any other names for Democrats as future candidates in 2016, or is it still just Stephanie Herseth Sandlin and Brendan Johnson as the names that people are talking about?
I think those are the only ones that people are talking about on a widespread basis. On the other hand, I would say, I would never say that there's nobody else out there. I always try to remind people a little more than 4 years ago, Kristi Noem was an underdog in the Republican primary for Congress, and people were surprised that she won the primary. And there was nobody, months before that primary who would have predicted that Kristi Noem would be the next congresswoman from South Dakota. But she rose up and rose to success and prominence in quite a hurry. So there's, I looked at the numbers this morning, there's almost 180,000 registered Democrats in South Dakota. So I would never sit here and say that there's only two of those who would be, viable candidates for Congress. Obviously, there are other people out there who could be viable candidates whose names we may not know at this point, but you never know what the future holds.
Well, on the Republican side of things, Senator John Thune was reelected this month to the chairmanship of the Senate Republican Conference. That's the number three spot in the party's Senate leadership. What do you think this means for him, Seth, especially with Republicans taking control of the Senate in January?
Well, it's just another step in his sort of steady progression up the ladder in Washington. And the position with the Republican Conference, he's tasked with national messaging. And so he's in charge of, formulating Senate Republicans' communication strategy, basically, and keeping them on task with that. And we've seen lately he created the minor stir with some comments he made about climate change on television. But that's part of his role, is to be out there setting that message and setting that tone. And I think the real step he took, after this recent election, is that he'll soon rise to the chairmanship of the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. And that'll happen in January when Congress convenes, and that's his first, committee chairmanship, and it's a major one. It's the committee that's tasked with formulating a highway bill to distribute money for roads and bridges all over the country. It also puts him in position that the Transportation Department reports to that committee, and the Federal Aviation Administration is within the Transportation Department. And from that position, Thune has been able to advocate a lot for the expansion of the Powder River airspace out here in Wyoming, Montana, and South Dakota, and North Dakota, which would be a major a major accomplishment for Ellsworth Air Force Base and solidifying Ellsworth's future. So as chairman of that committee, he's more able to advocate for that issue. So, you know, and I did a story on him recently noting that quietly he's built his campaign war chest to more than $9 million. Nobody ran against him last time when he was up for election. He's been fundraising continually ever since. So when you consider he's got $9 million in the bank and he's the number three in Senate Republican leadership, he's got a powerful committee chairmanship now. It's, you know, this is really the high point of his career, and it'll be interesting to see where he goes from here and if he parlays this power into legislation and accomplishments.
So a possible presidential run for Senator Thune in 2016?
Well, that always comes up, and it's funny, you know, I interviewed him a couple times recently, and I avoided asking that question. I was going to, and then I didn't, and I just, you know, this soon after an election, I hate to play into the constant cycle and already looking forward and covering, you know, the next election when, for example, the new Congress hasn't even been seated yet, you know, so I didn't ask him, but there's always that speculation, and, you know, I share this story often. I'll never forget when I was working in Mitchell and we were having an editorial board meeting with Senator Thune. We asked him about running for president. This was during the Romney Obama race, and he was being there was speculation that Thune might be a vice presidential candidate. We asked him about his presidential aspirations, and he said, you know, I could raise the first million in South Dakota easily, but it's the second billion that worries me. That's the sort of, I guess, disadvantage of that you have when you're from a small, sparsely populated state, is you don't have that big base of major donors. And as we saw this cycle, you know, there were Senate races that cost $100 million with all the money spent. And so, you know, the amount of money you need to run for president is just astronomical. You know, that said, he's obviously on a path that if he wanted to do something like that, he could probably do it. But it would be, you know, an immense challenge to raise the kind of money to do it. But on the other hand, he does have, you know, from years in Congress, a lot of connections, and he's proven himself to be a good fundraiser. So we'll see. I think he'll obviously be in the mix and be part of that conversation. It'll be up to him to decide if he wants to take that on.
Well, finally, Seth, since the election, we've had something of a respite from any news about EB-5. Anything coming up there as far as any news or anything regarding any investigations or anything?
Well, immediately after the election, we had, of course, Yoak Boland's written testimony to the legislature's Operations and Audit Committee. And there weren't all that many surprises there, but I think what everybody's waiting on now is this mysterious federal investigation, which the FBI confirmed prior to the election was still ongoing. And that's kind of the final thing in all of this. And it's been frustrating for those following the story, because the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office hasn't released any information on it at all. So it's unknown whether any charges will ever be filed there, what the findings may be. A lot of people would speculate, you know, maybe Yoak Boland, there's going to be some news on him. There's a lot of people who have accused him of various forms of wrongdoing and have wondered why he hasn't faced any consequences for that other than media scrutiny and finally losing his company's contract with state government. But I think those are the two things, that investigation and what becomes of Yoak Boland. Does he just kind of fade quietly into obscurity, or does he face some actual consequences for some of the things people have accused him of doing?
All right. Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. Seth, thanks for going solo this week, and have a nice Thanksgiving.
You're welcome. Yeah, hopefully. I'm sorry to subject the listeners to just me, but hopefully we'll have Kevin next time.
All right. Thanks so much, Seth.
Okay. You're welcome.